We're happy to have a visitor in services tonight. Appreciate having her here. Trust she'll come back again another day. That's her intention. This morning when I got up, she said, for those of you, again, on live streaming, I'm referring to my wife, who the last time she was here was the last Sunday in November. Had to do with health conditions and then, of course, concern about the COVID and her pre-existing conditions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so this morning she was feeling good, and I said, that's wonderful. Now, don't do too much. Don't tire yourself out, all right? And she actually told me on the way to church, John Mark, that she obeyed. Yeah, she said, I did what my husband said. Whew, yeah, how about that? I was so encouraged. I still have some influence to bear. I'm not looking up at her on purpose. Mark chapter 3. We commonly think of the Apostle John as a gentle, easygoing disciple. Love is the key word that is often associated with John. And therefore, we think of him in terms of tenderness and affection. John is identified as the disciple whom Jesus loved. In John's first letter of the three that he wrote, he repeatedly uses the word love and the subject of love. But John was not always gentle and easygoing, tender and affectionate. Here in Mark chapter 3, verse 16. And Simon, referring to Jesus, and Simon, he surnamed Peter, and James, the son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James, he surnamed them Boanerges, which is the sons of thunder. The sons of thunder. James and John were named this because of their temperament. They were naturally explosive. An explosive temper is possibly the most common fault of human nature that people experience. However, I have come to recognize that there is another very common, I don't think it's on the same level as temper, but it comes close, and that is moodiness, another fault of human nature. Now, do not misunderstand temper. That's our subject tonight. Moodiness is for another night. Temper in and of itself is not a bad thing. You may be surprised to know, as I was in preparing this message, that 80% of the dictionary's definitions of temper are positive statements. To make suitable. Let me give one of the definitions of temper. To make suitable, desirable, or free from excess by mingling with something else to moderate. You have often spoken about people who are even-tempered. You've said that already. Or good-tempered. They have a good disposition. In steel, temper is its condition of hardness and toughness due to the mixture of certain qualities under heat. When metal is given temper, it is given durability and strength, and the item's value and importance is thereby increased. So, in steel, temper is the condition of hardness and toughness due to the mixture under heat. And so it is in people that under the heat of pressures, under the heat of the undesirable, we can be tempered. We can be moderated. We can be made suitable. Now, surely when we say temper, we think of the negative side. When I say we're going to look at the subject of temper tonight, we think of losing your temper, or showing your temper, or having a bad temper. The tendency to become angry and irate. What leads to throwing things, slamming doors, and children stomping on the floor. In a person, temper simply means, or actually means, temperament. It is one's frame of mind. It is one's disposition. And it can mean a calm composure. That's their temper. Or it can mean anger and irritation. In its good sense, temper is something added to a person's life which can counteract the explosive manner of bad temper. You see, we all have a temper. Is it going to be good or bad? If it's bad, it needs something to moderate it. It needs something to bring balance to it. Now, in a person, in metal, in steel, it's heat. And depending on what one's doing, it may involve adding certain other ingredients, I call them. That's certainly not the word when you're talking about tempering steel. But in a person, the something that we need to temper us is the grace of God. The grace of God is what will temper that uneven, irritable temper. But you see, just like in steel, the man who's working it, he must take and add whatever it is. It doesn't, you know, it's there, but he has to pick it up and he has to add it. It doesn't do it itself. And in us as people, the same thing is true. The grace of God will temper our unevenness. But it isn't going to do it on its own. We have got to, as it were, pick it up. We have got to yield to it. We must avail ourselves of it so that we can find that this irritable, uneven temper. We were having conversation on the way to church tonight. And I said, yeah, I wake up sometimes and I don't know, it's just not one of them good days. I don't know, I feel in a funk, okay? I'll talk to God and say, Lord, I don't know what's wrong, but something's just not, I just don't feel right. And then, you know, I'll try and do some things to change that. And sometimes I can get it changed, and other times I just go through the whole day in that, my term, funk, F-U-N-K, okay, is what I mean. I don't know. The grace of God can temper.
Yes, sir.
And then when I'm going through that sort of thing, I'll say, Lord, is there something I'm missing? Lord, is there something that I need to know? And she's here now to hear it. Normally she hasn't been here. She's been home, and by the time I get home, hopefully she forgets it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, Pat will say to me, she'll say, is something wrong? And I don't think so. Why? Well, you just don't seem right. Okay. You ever have that happen with your spouse? Now, be careful. Don't lie. Okay. In the work of regeneration, a person receives a new nature. When we become a believer, we are given a new nature. And this new nature has qualities of peace and love and long-suffering and patience. And when the new nature is in control, a person's life is even-tempered. But when the old nature's in control, there's nothing even about it. It's out of balance. And you can recognize it, and certainly others can recognize it. And we ought not to let that control us. For whomsoever you yield yourself to him are the instruments of righteousness. It is a mistake to think that a Christian must be a spineless person, overrun by all, gutless with little or no courage to stand up or to speak out for right. No, we need not be that, okay? For the child of God, it is not a matter of removing temper. Well, I've got a temper. Now, if you say, I've got to get that under control, that's what we're talking about. And that's by the grace of God. But if you say, I've got to get rid of this temper. Well, if you mean the bad temper, yeah. But you're not going to get rid of all temper. And that's what I think we need to recognize, that temper is a part of us. But there's the good side. And there's the bad side. And for the child of God, it's not a matter of removing temper, but rather controlling and redirecting temper. Oh, I remember early years. So does Patricia. The hinges were weakened on the doors. There's a gash. Is that still on the headboard of the bed, or was that removed when it was modified? Still there? It was removed. Oh, that's good. Because there was a mark on the headboard of the bed. Every time I saw it, it was a vivid reminder of something that wasn't good. Do you have any memories like that? And so, don't forget the positive side of temper, such as being even-tempered, a controlled emotion. We try to forget and certainly not yield to the negative side, such as anger, which is uncontrolled emotions. Controlled emotions, not flying off the handle, but being a balanced individual. Now, to someone who struggles with this, being balanced is maybe just a dream. But let me tell you, that dream can come true. And it need not take as long as what we make it. It can get under control sooner than what many times happens in a person. Redirecting our anger, not at little petty annoyances, rather toward evil, sin, and godlessness. I find myself evidencing my weakness, for it is little petty annoyances that brings out my anger. Like today, just today. Now, fortunately, I didn't lose it. I'm glad to tell you that I didn't lose it with what I'm about to describe. Pat got a box of stuff that she ordered in the mail. Don't want to make an advertisement here that's not intended. Anyway, she got a box of stuff, and I took it in the office to open it with my box cutter. Wow, I could have gone on a plane and taking control of it. I have a box cutter. A little humor there for those of you that are watching. The folks here in the church know when to laugh, and when it's just one of them things again, their pastor saying something. So I go in and use the box cutter to open it. And then, of course, it had packaging peanuts in it, and they get all over the place, electrostatic, magnetic, and it, you know, they stick to your hair. Some of us don't have as many sticking to it. And a big wad of paper. I got that all out, and here are the 8 items in the box. Well, you know, I pulled them out, actually, one by one, and set them on my desk. Took out all of that stuff I described. And then I took the box, and I put it up to the edge of the desk. And the intention was to sweep those 7 or 8 items in the box. Well, wouldn't you know, that's when the lid that I thought I had tucked under the front decided to come out just as I'm sweeping. And that means 7 or 8 items went on the floor. Now that's when a petty annoyance could become a real bad temper. I'm happy to tell you, it didn't. Now, I wasn't happy about that happening. I didn't say, oh, good, look, they fell on the floor. You know, but I didn't lose it. Now, you don't know how important that is to me. Okay? But anyway, so I picked them up. And wouldn't you know, the third one I picked up to put in the box didn't go in the box. It went over the box. Another petty annoyance that gave me an opportunity to show my bad temper, but I didn't. Now that's good. That may seem not too big a thing to many people, but judging by the chuckles and smiles, I'm not alone in the petty annoyances. So we should direct our anger at evil, sin, and godlessness. Ephesians, turn to it. Ephesians chapter 4. You're familiar with this verse. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26. Ephesians 4, 26. Be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. Be ye angry and sin not. Righteous indignation, not personal bitterness, not a vengeful attitude, not petty annoyances, but it is all right to have anger against sin. But don't sin while you're doing it. The Lord Jesus Christ expressed the right kind of anger. Let's see it. We're in the book of Mark. We're in chapter 3. We're going to go to verse 1. Speaking of Jesus, and he entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man there which had a withered hand, and they watched him. That's Jesus. Whether he would heal him on the Sabbath day, that they might accuse him. And he saith unto the man which had the withered hand, stand forth. And he saith unto them, you see, now he knew what they were thinking. He said to the man, stand up. The man stood up with the withered hand. Then he looks at the scribes and the Pharisees, and he said unto them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath days or to do evil? To save life or to kill? But they held their peace. They didn't answer him because they knew that the correct answer would indict them. I love that. Jesus is always smarter than his accusers. And when he had looked round about on them, scribes, Pharisees, standing all around, they tried to trap him, and he looked around all of them. But notice what it says here in verse 5. He looked round about on them with anger. And being grieved for the hardness of their hearts, he saith unto the man, stretch forth thine hand. And just as Pastor taught us on Sunday, in the command of God is the enabling power of God to do it. And he was able to stretch it out. And his hand was restored whole, just like his other one. But I'm focusing on the beginning of verse 5. He looked on them with anger. There's nothing wrong with anger against sin, evil, and unrighteousness. Of course, in having that anger against this evil, Jesus did not go on to commit another sin by how he dealt with that anger that he had. And that's where you and I, we can see this as an example, but we must be careful then that when we're angry at sin, that we don't go on and commit another sin by whatever it is that we say or do. Look at Matthew, if you'll go back just a few pages to Matthew chapter 23. Matthew 23, verse 14 and 15, where Jesus says, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayer. Therefore ye shall receive the greater damnation. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye compass sea and land to make one proselyte. They'll go to no ends in order to make one proselyte, one to follow them. And when he is made, ye make him twofold more the child of hell than yourselves. They were already a child of hell. But they, in following the scribes and Pharisees, thought they were doing what God wanted. And in the process, they were not. And they would put their confidence in what these scribes and Pharisees said. They were already on the way to hell. And now they were double damned, if you please, because they thought they were doing right, but they weren't. We need to be careful when we do soul winning that we don't do the same thing. We give someone the wrong direction and they think they're doing what's right and they think they're doing what's needed. There are those who teach that you must not only have faith and believe, but you must be baptized in order to be saved. And when they convert someone, they make them twofold a child of hell. Because now they've combined works with faith. And throughout the New Testament, we're told that's not true. But I want to focus on the beginning word of verse 14 and 15. Woe! Woe! Now, woe usually carries the idea of grief or sorrow or sadness at what's about to be described. And Jesus had sorrow and sadness about what these scribes and Pharisees were doing to the widows and to the one spoken of in verse 15. But it also, you look far enough in the definition of woe, and you'll see that it carries with it the meaning of anger. He was grieved by what these scribes and Pharisees were doing, but he was also angered at them for what they were doing. It would be that righteous indignation. Then one last passage in the Gospel of John, if you'll turn to that fourth book of the Gospels, fourth book of the New Testament. Chapter 2, verse 13 to 16, another familiar passage. You'll recognize it when I read it. John 2, 13, and the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem and found in the temple that sold oxen and sheep and doves. Now, the selling of animals at the temple for sacrifices was not in and of itself wrong. It was normally done in what we would call a porch of the tabernacle or of the temple, okay? But what we find happening here is something that was okay or normal being turned into something not okay and not normal. And the changers, end of verse 14, and the changers of money sitting where these things were being sold. And when he had made a scourge of small cords, he drove them all out of the temple, and the sheep and the oxen, and poured out the changers' money, and overthrew the tables. Now, tell me, please, that Jesus wasn't angry. He was not when he went about braiding those cords to make a whip. And when he upset the tables, he was not smiling like Joel Osteen. Okay? No, he was not. He was angered. And he said unto them that sold the doves, take these things hence. Make not my Father's house an house of merchandise. And his disciples remembered that it was written, the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. Jesus had as much as he was going to take, and he took no more. But when he was angry, he did sin not. Temper. There's the positive side, there's the negative side. There's bad temper, there's even temper. We'll continue looking at the subject of temper next week in the prayer meeting time. We thank those of you that have been watching on live streaming for joining us. We are now going to go into the